Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, right here on Revolution Radio, this sixth day of March 2024, the day after Super Tuesday. I'm joined today by Joe Olson, who's a brilliant engineer, qualified across the board in structural, mechanical, civil, and electrical engineering. We'll have much to discuss. We begin, however, with the latest from yesterday. Early on, it was being reported that Biden and Trump were locking in wins. That was, of course, the case. They were polishing off their winning streak with Nikki Haley's future on the line. The early reports include it. Former President Trump and President Biden are seeing early wins as polls close on Super Tuesday, the biggest voting day before November, that could vault the former president to the brink of clinching the GOP nomination. Why it matters? It may also be former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley's last chance to have an impact on Trump's commanding lead. Senate races in Texas and California are set to be among the night's most competitive. Well, it's all over but the shouting. Trump took all but one state. Nikki Haley won Vermont. Trump's leads were massive in terms of the total number of delegates so far, with a necessity to accumulate 1,215 out of 2,429. Trump has 1,040. He's 954 ahead of Nikki Haley with 86. Ron DeSantis, who has dropped out, has 9. Vivek Ramaswamy, who's also dropped out, has 3. Haley has now withdrawn from the Republican presidential race. Here's what she's planning. South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley announced Wednesday she's exiting the Republican presidential race, leaving former President Trump as the party's presumptive nominee. The time has now come to suspend my campaign. I said I wanted Americans to have their voices heard. I have done that. I have no regrets. Haley did not endorse Trump during her address. Instead, she called on the former president, turned the support of voters who backed her. The plan appears to leave room for her to endorse Trump ahead of the general in November, sources familiar with her plans told CNN prior to the speech. Haley, who was Trump's ambassador to the United Nations, was the last of a dozen major candidates whom the former president vanquished in a GOP primary he dominated from start to finish, including 14 of the 15 GOP contests Tuesday, even as he skipped the party's debates and maintained a much lighter schedule of early state travel than all of his rivals. Haley had vowed to stay in the race through at least Super Tuesday. She had begun sharpening her attacks on Trump, questioning his mental fitness, lumping him together with President Joe Biden as one of two grumpy old men. But her home state of South Carolina served as her fourth straight loss of 2024, including to none of these candidates in the Nevada primary, where Trump wasn't competing and there were no delegates at stake. He opted to participate instead in the party-run caucuses, which awarded delegates. Haley had little hope of keeping pace with a former president, with the race shifting into a new gear, moving from early state contests in which retail politics take center stage to a national race, with 56% of the party's delegates to be awarded by March 12th, most in winner-take-all contests. Till, in her campaign, Haley became the first Republican woman to win two primary contests, Vermont and the District of Columbia. The wins prevented Trump from being able to say he shut out Haley in every state, but victories were not enough to award her with a significant delegate count. The former South Carolina governor's exit demonstrated how little Republican voters were swayed by arguments about electability, with the party's base remaining loyal to Trump, who had falsely claimed he lost the 2020 election due to widespread fraud. According to this report, we know, in fact, that is true and provable on multiple grounds. Despite general polls showing Haley was in a stronger position against Biden, I don't believe that for a second. After Trump won more than 50% of the vote in Iowa, where Haley based a distant third, members of the GOP quickly consolidated around the former president and endorsed him. Former 2024 candidates include Vivek Ramaswamy, Tim Scott, Doug Burgum, campaigned with Trump on the eve of the New Hampshire primary. Florida Governor DeSantis also took a parting shot at Haley as he exited the field, calling her platform a repackaged form of warm-door corporatism. There was not a similar Russia support behind Haley. While former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson endorsed her, former New Jersey to Governor Chris Christie did not and was caught on the hot mic saying she would be smoked. In New Hampshire, a state or ally, Governor Chris Sununu once predicted she'd win in a landslide before polls showed Trump pulling ahead. Haley failed to defy expectation and lost by 11 points, even though it's an open primary. On Super Tuesday, even as Haley team saw a victory in Vermont and strong showing in Virginia suburbs, the benchmark for staying in the race was not breached. Going into the biggest day of voting, the advisor said the team had a loose threshold of winning about 40% of the vote in several states to credibly remain in the race. On the campaign trail, Haley often tried to distinguish herself from Trump as the better alternative candidate, who'd be capable of reeling in moderate and independent voters in a general election against Biden. I win moderate and independents, which he, Trump, doesn't. That's why he lost in 2018. That's why he lost in 2020. That's why he lost in 2022. And that's why in every poll you see, he loses to Joe Biden and I win. But all of that is rubbish and doesn't take into account the manner in which votes were manufactured, especially using mail-in voting, and the outcome was rigged. Though she signed a pledge committing to support the eventual GOP nominee, Haley has recently suggested she's no longer bound by the commitment, that she'll make the decision she wants to make. Now, CNN had an interesting post-election discussion, and you want to listen for subtleties about how the Democrats are going to spin these matters. This is definitely worth thinking about.
And we, you know, you have to give the devil his due. Donald Trump having the night that he wanted to have, an early projection of Virginia. Bad news for Nikki Haley, who thought maybe that was a Commonwealth she could wrest away from Donald Trump.
Then. Yeah, I mean, Jake, Virginia, North Carolina, these were two of the states we were looking at, obviously early because the polls closed early. But in addition to that, because those are used to be solidly red states, and now Virginia has been trending blue, and North Carolina in particular is one that I was just getting a text from a senior Republican saying that this could be a big problem for Donald Trump if we're also looking at down ballot races. If Mark Robinson, who is very Trumpy, maybe even more Trumpy than Trump, who Trump has endorsed, when assuming that he wins the Republican primary for governor, that could be a very, very big factor in what we see in the presidential race as well.
It could motivate Democrats. Definitely. Absolutely. What's absolutely fascinating about these results, and we have seen this time and again in this primary season, is just almost a different universe that Haley voters are in than Trump voters. Yeah, a lot of Haley voters are Democrats. Some of them may be independents who are coming out to vote because they're concerned about Donald Trump. But still, I mean, what data point from the Virginia exit polls, 78% of those voters believe that Joe Biden won legitimately. Donald Trump, 95% of Donald Trump voters in Virginia, according to the exit polls, believe that Joe Biden did not win in 2020 legitimately. And that just goes all the way down the line. Today, I talked to Carrie Lake, who's running for the Arizona Senate seat. She says that her race in 2022 was rigged. She said Donald Trump's election in 2020 was rigged because that is where Republican base voters are. But the question is the general election voters. And that is such a different calculus for these candidates. And these results show that.
It's so critical. And in North Carolina, you made exactly the right point. Mark Robinson is just symbolic of how divergent the Republican Party in some of these states, especially a state like North Carolina, is from the median gettable voter. Mm-hmm. And when the Republican Party in a state like North Carolina veers all the way to the right, that means that the results that we see tonight are not going to be what should tell the Republican Party how they should operate come November. That delta is so huge, it's going to be a problem. Diane Gallagher spoke to a voter tonight who said, there's absolutely no way I can have Mark Robinson as the governor of the mm-hmm. state because he's so extreme. She's not the only one. There are going to be a lot of voters. We talk a lot about suburban voters, but voters who are just regular people who are not in either camp or another, who are going to shy away from the extremes. And while Trump is going to romp tonight in a lot of places, he's probably not getting the information that he needs to get about where he and the Republican Party need to be in order to get those all-important voters who are right there in the political middle.
Caitlin, you have some new reporting.
Yeah, well, as we're just looking at all of this, you know, one factor of this and the what the down-ballot races mean, how does this resemble maybe even the presidential race? The other big part of this, and the reason that Trump is ready to move on from the Nikki Haley aspect of this race that we're still talking about, is money and having to shore up his finances, because Biden does have a major advantage there when it comes to fundraising. They've already made ad plans for as far as August. They've already are looking ahead to that. That has been something that the Trump team has lamented for several weeks now because they have been able to. And one thing that Trump is doing, as you saw everyone behind Kristen Holmes there earlier at Mar-a-Lago, is he's been hosting donors at Mar-a-Lago today, as he has real concerns about shoring up those finances. And we've just confirmed that one of the people he met with in recent days was Elon Musk, obviously one of the richest people in the world. We're confirming reporting from the New York Times. It's not clear that Elon Musk is going to donate to Trump, but it is notable that those are the steps that he's taking in these recent days, as he's less focused really on the down ballot races and way more focused on his own personal finances and for his PAC.
Well, and his own, maybe not his finances, but his own legal troubles. He is hoping and looks like he'll be successful in the RNC and whatever little
which
money
they have
left.
Either,
and he has paying for his legal bills. The flip side is, Audie, that the president, Joe Biden, has been doing very well in the past 2 months, according to what the campaign is saying, in fundraising.
Which means there are a bunch of people who might think age is a problem and clearly want to help him. I know in the media we're sort of like, he's got problems, but people also vote with their finances. You know, one thing I noted earlier is you guys were talking, or we heard from a kind of litmus test voter who said, I care about immigration, I care about crime. I think for Democrats, that's been a little bit tough. What is your litmus test? Outside of abortion, what do people talk about where they feel like, no matter what, this is what I have to vote on? As their memories start to dim, or if they start to really feel that the judiciary is undermined in some kind of way, the democracy argument starts to wobble. And I think that for Biden, who really relied on that in the year that a Carrie Lake lost, that's going to be tough.
Joe, I'd like your comments on all of the above. Trump clearly crushed Nikki Haley. That wasn't really in doubt. When they talk about Biden still having financial support, that's anti-Trump money. They're very worried that he's going to come in, clean house, drain the swamp, get us out of these foreign entanglements, secure the border. Indeed, I now would estimate perhaps as much as 50% of the black and Latino vote is going to go to Donald Trump in 2024. Your thoughts?
Yes, well, I'm a little less optimistic about the ability of DJT to clean the swamp because he had 4 years and he did a very poor job of that. But that's the longest exposure to CNN that I've had since I used to go traveling cross country and be stuck in the airport having to listen to that dribble. But yeah, they have absolutely nothing to offer, and it's really painful to have to sit and listen to that. Yet today is the day that the Alamo fell in 1836. We're going to be discussing that a little bit later. But yesterday was Super Tuesday in Texas, and I haven't had a chance to check the results, but three of the state Supreme Criminal Court justices who voted to not allow Ken Paxton to prosecute over 900 cases of voter fraud in the four different counties that have district attorneys that were funded by George Soros that did not prosecute any of those crimes in those counties were up for reelection. And they got support from every one of the state major Republican senators and the lieutenant governor, the governor, and also from Donald Trump. So I haven't checked the results this morning, but I'm hoping that we have three new justices on the Supreme Court replacing the rhinos that said that the state of Texas has no overriding criminal authority over the 260 counties of district attorneys that can go rogue at any time. And there is absolutely no mechanism for criminal prosecution at this time based on their misinterpretation of the Constitution.
Well, that's all interesting stuff, Joe. You notice how on CNN they were focusing on what they think is a vulnerability, a fellow named Robinson. He's black. They're calling him an extremist. Apparently, he is, among other extreme measures, a Holocaust denier. Now, I've explained repeatedly that if you've done the research, you're either a Holocaust denier or a big fat liar. So apparently he's vulnerable because he's not a big fat liar. There's other issues here we want to review taking place before we turn to the Alamo. Namely, Trump wins Super Tuesday, and almost coincidentally, the FBI warns about an Iranian spy allegedly plotting to kill U.S. officials, in particular, Trump administration officials. The FBI is on the hunt for an Iranian intel operative who's been allegedly plotting to assassinate current and former U.S. government officials, including Mark Pompeo, the Secretary of State under former President Donald Trump. Last week, the Miami field office issued a public alert for Majid Dishjani Farahani, who is suspected of being a member of Iran's Ministry of Intelligence and Security. The FBI warned of Farahani, 42, in a most wanted notice that he speaks Farsi, French, Spanish, and English, will often move between Iran and Venezuela. According to the FBI, Farahani was recruiting individuals for various ops in the United States, including lethal targeting of current and former U.S. government officials as part of a revenge operation for taking out Iranian Major General Qasem Soleimani in 2020 under Trump and Pompeo. Here you have a wanted poster they've been circulating. Semaphore reported U.S. officials at Pompeo and former special envoy for Iran, Brian Hook, were given 24-hour security after the FBI warned of Farahani. Farahani's also accused of recruiting people to run surveillance activities focused on religious site businesses and other facilities. Soleimani, of course, was killed in a drone strike ordered by Trump in January of 2020. They call him a brutal Iranian general. He was actually a statesman, a leader, a military genius. I admired him enormously. The State Department claims Soleimani was directly behind 17% of U.S. personnel deaths during the Iraq War. That may or may not be true. Here's a statement about him. He nullified all the schemes of the U.S. in West Asia. Marder Soleimani was able to stand up to all the plots that had been hatched with money, with vast propaganda efforts by the Americans, with the diplomatic capabilities of the Americans, and the pressure they exert on politicians, particularly in weak countries. He was able to nullify all the schemes set up with these instruments in West Asia, said Ayatollah Khamenei. Shortly after his death, the top Iranian general warned Iran would get revenge, raising concern when Iranian-backed Hamas terrorists launched the attack on October 7th. While Hamas denied it had the same reasons as the Revolutionary Guard for its 10/7 atrocities, which were not atrocities. Its activities were acts of war, taking hostages. While there have been many false reports giving exaggerated claims of rape and savage murder and beheading of children, they were all nonsense. Iran's threats and thirst for bloodshed following the death of his beloved general were clearly heard. U.S. forces were even attacked by Iran-backed terrorists in January, and three American soldiers were killed. Now, Joe, personally, I think this is setting up a patsy that, in fact, the deep state is so concerned they want to assassinate Trump and they want to blame it on an Iranian. I mean, this is the way the Israelis do business, right? 9/11 was an Israeli op, but they had a phone call come in to claim responsibility by the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, which had nothing to do with it. They showed archival footage of Palestinians celebrating from some past religious or political event as though it were contemporaneous, because the Palestinians and the Iranians are their enemy. This thus appears to me to be an Israeli-inspired psyop, where they too are apprehensive about Trump. They too are worried that he's going to end the wars abroad. They too are worried he's going to secure the border and put America rather than Israel first. Joe, your thoughts.
Yeah, well, they're following the same script they used for JFK and Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby and RFK. 9/11, we know absolutely the FBI covered up everything to do with honest investigation about what happened on 9/11. You and I have done great work on that particular subject. But then just getting up to a more contemporary stuff, in 2016, WikiLeaks released the DNC files that showed that Hillary Clinton had stolen the primary from Bernie Sanders. That pissed off one of the DNC workers named Seth Rich, who was downloaded the files, sent them to Assange, and then was murdered. And the FBI seized both of his laptops and has never released them. Then we had Hunter Biden that went in and had a laptop that he left at a computer shop, another laptop that he left with his psychiatrist. They seized both of those laptops and sealed both of them. But then getting back to the Seth Rich DNC leak, in order to cover for it, they said that it was done by Russians who hacked the DNC in order to throw the election for Trump, and that he was colluding with Putin. And so they came up with a guy named Guccifer 2.0 and started releasing these files under his name, using the CIA Vault 7 to show false IPS addresses. And then after Guccifer was proven to be in jail for over 6 months without access to a computer, they said, oh, well, we found another Russian that's doing this. His name is Fancy Bear. So they released another supposed files that implicated Fancy Bear. And then they said, well, that doesn't really work out too well either. So they said, well, then we'll do Cozy Bear. All of this was put together by a group called CrowdStrike, who colluded with the FBI in order to get FISA warrants against all the members of the Trump campaign and penetrate with surveillance every bit of the phone calls and messaging of the entire Trump administration and hamstring him for 3 years with a stupid former FBI director Mueller's investigations. This is absolutely a 100% rogue organization that has no benefit to the American people at all. And what they're planning on doing with this Iranian, they'll find somebody that they can snuff and they'll plant something on him and they'll say, well, he committed suicide, or, you know, we had to shoot him because he was trying to get away, or whatever their excuse is. We know what their playbook is because they played it over and over and over.
Well, just bear in mind, they're going to try to assassinate Trump and blame it on an Iranian agent. Yes, I agree. Patsy, like Sirhan in relation to Bobby or Lee Oswald in relation to Jack. You're 100% correct, Joe. Trump, fortunately, has very good security. There have been over a dozen past attempts, including one with a drone that fired through his bedroom window at Mar-a-Lago. And had they not replaced the glass with bulletproof the week before, he would have been killed in his bed. It's that bad. Meanwhile, additional stories. Covert Action magazine. CIA spills the beans about deep involvement in Ukraine, part of ploy to undercut Republican congressional opposition to the war. John Curacao reporting. The New York Times on Feb 25th published an explosive story of what purports to be the history of the CIA in Ukraine from the maiden coup of 2014 to the present. The story, The Spy War, How the CIA Secretly Helps Ukraine Fight Putin, underscores a mutual fear and hatred of Russia that has nurtured a relationship so close Ukraine is now one of the CIA's closest intelligence partners in the world. If you go to read more, somehow it fails to connect. No surprise there. That's standard operating procedure for censorship. Meanwhile, a German military leak reveals British soldiers are in Ukraine helping fire Storm Shadow missiles at Russian troops. German military were also discussing how Taurus missiles could destroy the Kerch Bridge. British, this is from antiwar.com. British soldiers are on the ground in Ukraine, helping Ukrainian forces fire Storm Shadow missiles, according to a leaked recording of a conversation between German military officers published by Russian media. Germany confirmed the authenticity of the recording. The British did not dispute the claim. UK confirmed last week it had a small number of troops inside Ukraine who are supporting the armed forces of Ukraine. The UK first began shipping Storm Shadow missiles to Ukraine last year, marking a significant escalation of NATO support since they have a range of 155 miles, further than any other NATO-provided missile. France has also provided Ukraine with a French variant of the Storm Shadow, known as Scout missile, but it didn't have the troops out with targeting on the ground. Right back with Joe Olson after this break.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, there's more on this story. In the recording, Lieutenant General Ingo Gerhardt, head of the German Air Force, described how the British assist Ukraine. When it comes to mission planning, I know how the English do it, completely in reach back. They also have a few people on the ground. They do that. The French don't. He was discussing the possibility Germany providing Ukraine with Taurus missiles, which would double Ukraine's strike capabilities as they can hit targets up to 300 miles away. During the conversation, the officer said Taurus would likely be used to blow up the Kerch Bridge, which connects Crimea to the Russian mainland and has been attacked twice by Ukraine. Kremlin said the leaked conversation make it clear that plans to carry out strikes inside Russia are under discussion within the German military. The leaked recording came after German Chancellor Olaf Scholz suggested French and British troops were inside Ukraine. He made the comment while explaining his reasoning for not supplying Ukraine with the Taurus missiles, saying it required a German troop presence to match the level of British and French support for Ukraine's use of the Storm Shadow. Scholz said, providing the kind of support under discussion would make Germany a direct party to the conflict, since Taurus missiles have such a long range and can be used to hit targets deep inside Russia. The leaked recording also comes after French President Emmanuel Macron stirred an uproar by saying sending NATO troops to Ukraine shouldn't be ruled out, despite the obvious risk of a direct Russia-NATO war, which could quickly turn nuclear. His comments highlighted the fact the presence of NATO special ops inside Ukraine has been an open secret. Last year, the Discord leak revealed that as of March 2023, 97 NATO special ops soldiers were inside Ukraine, including 14 Americans, 15 British, 15 French, 17 from Latvia, and 1 from the Netherlands. Meanwhile, we have a report from military expert Alexander Zimowski. NATO troops in Poland in the immediate vicinity of the Russian border practicing a breakthrough into the Kaliningrad region, in total about 20,000 motorized infantry soldiers, up to 100 tanks in the first echelon. The training includes the guidance of crossings, air cover, and train of tank crews to interact with engineering units during upcoming water obstacles of varying complexity. Here we have a report about some of these developments.
Has been destroyed off the coast of Crimea by Ukrainian kamikaze.
I'll start.
Hello, everyone. I'm the Enforcer, and welcome to the breaking news. Today, the Sergei Kudov, a Project 22-160 class Corvette, has been destroyed off the coast of Crimea by Ukrainian kamikaze drone attack. We were told this news just hours ago as Visegrad 24, amongst many other sources, began to confirm the destruction and sinking of the Sergei Kudov. We have several different perspectives of the attack. We have some camera footage here released by the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense from the kamikaze drones themselves as they began to hit the Sergei Kudov. And we also have a camera video made on shore of the Sergei Kudov also being stricken and sunk as well. Here's the first footage showing the kamikaze boats attacking the Project 22-160. The Project 22-160s are a 94-93 meter long Corvettes, brand new, designed for the Russian Navy. These are some of the most modern and advanced ships of their class for the Russian Federation, and their loss is heavily felt throughout the fleet, especially considering that nearly half of the combat fleet of the Russian Federation's Black Sea Fleet has been destroyed. These kinds of losses are very severe and are something that the Russian Federation sorely misses out on when they begin to lose ships like these. We get a lower...
I think that that's not going to be well received by Vladimir Putin. Joe, your thoughts about these developments of involvement in NATO forces and all that?
Well, absolutely. The British are eyeball deep in everything to do with those naval drones. But just a little bit of background for people that haven't been following their geography lessons lately. Kaliningrad was formerly Königsberg, and that was a Prussian city, and it was it's 86 square miles, and it was taken over by the Russians after the end of the war. And it is on the Baltic Sea and is the only warm water port that Russia has access to. So it's absolutely big strategic value. It's got a population of just over 500,000 people. So the ominous thing is that if Russia, with their sophisticated tracking and monitoring of the signals for these different drones and the outputs from them with sonar and radar and satellite tracking, if they're vulnerable, then look at what the Houthis are doing in the Red Sea and tell yourself how safe the rest of the U.S. naval fleet is going to be. Like Douglas McGregor said, we have two types of vessels in the U.S. Navy. We have submarines and then we have targets because that's all we've got. And then getting back to the nefarious activities that have happened ever since the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989, Russia wanted to become a partner with the West. And they have enormous amount of resources that the West wants to steal from them, the same following the same imperialist model that they used throughout the world for the last several centuries. And so we're not going to cover everything, but if you go to Wiki and put in color revolutions, I'll give you the first two with colors and full dates. Rose Revolution was in Georgia, November of 2003. And then the Orange Revolution in Ukraine in November of 2004. But then we also had in 2005, Kyrgyzstan, Belarus in 2006, Moldova in 2009, Kyrgyzstan again in 2010, Russia in 2011, Belarus in 2020, Ukraine in 2022, Kyrgyzstan again in 2022. We've had over a dozen color revolutions just in Eastern Europe by the CIA, and Cookie Newlands is the one that's responsible for every one of these pieces of crap. And she's responsible for the probably 750,000 white Christian men who've been massacred on both sides in the Ukrainian-Russian war that she staged set with her Maidan revolution in 2014. So bottom line is, we are the most evil empire in the world at this point, and what we're doing in Gaza is further proof of that. You know, we can get delivered 60,000 pounds of bombs per day, but we can't deliver crackers and a bag of flour. Absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, Joe, that you mentioned Palestine. UNICEF warns child deaths in Gaza due to the Israeli siege will increase rapidly. Leave the camp anti-war for March. At least 16 Palestinian children have starved to death in the Gaza Strip in the past few days due to the U.S.-backed Israeli siege. UN Child Relief Agency is warning the number of child deaths will rapidly increase if conditions don't immediately change. Last week, we warned an explosion in child death was imminent if the burgeoning nutrition crisis were not resolved, said Adele Coder, UNICEF director for the Middle East and North Africa. Now the child deaths we feared are here and are likely to rapidly increase unless the war ends and obstacles to humanitarian relief are immediately resolved. The latest Palestinian child reported to die of hunger was Yazan Al-Kafarni, a 10-year-old with cerebral palsy who was in the Al-Najjar hospital in Rafah. 15 children have also died of malnutrition and dehydration at the Kamal Adwan Hospital in northern Gaza. The UN has previously warned Gaza's entire population of about 2.2 million is facing crisis levels of food insecurity. At least 576,000 Palestinians in Gaza facing catastrophic levels of deprivation and starvation. despite the dire situation. The State Department reaffirmed Monday will continue to provide military assistance for Israel's genocidal war. The U.S. is still not pushing for immediate ceasefire or using military aid as leverage over Israel to allow more aid trucks into Gaza instead. The U.S. dropped aid out of planes over the weekend, a move criticized by aid groups as a public relations ploy, since the amount was just a drop in the bucket of what's needed in Gaza. According to the latest number from Gaza's health ministry, 30,534 Palestinians have been killed, 71,920 injured. About 70% of the casualties are women and children. Meanwhile, a Houthi missile has hit a Swiss-owned container ship near Aden. The Red Sea has transferred from one of the world's most important maritime trade routes into a war zone. Iran-backed Houthi rebels have withstood dozens of bombing raids by U.S. and U.K. fighter jets. The Biden admin's Operation Prosperity Guardian continues to fail as yet another container ship was attacked on Tuesday. Meanwhile, massive blackouts as Hezbollah fires dozens of retaliatory rockets at Israeli site from Press TV March 5th. The Lebanese Hezbollah resistance has fired dozens of rockets at Israeli military sites in the northern flank of the 1948 occupied territories in retaliation for the ongoing brutal aggression against Palestinians and the besieged Gaza Strip. Lebanon's Arabic language Al-Mayadeen television network, citing a Hezbollah statement, reported resistance forces launched rockets at Gesher Hazif kibbutz, situated in western Galilee on the coastal highway, on Monday. The statement noted the rocket fire was in retaliation for recent Israeli strikes on southern villages and civilian homes, including an attack on a civil defense center at Al-Dissa town in southern Lebanon. The Hezbollah-linked Islam Health Committee said three of its paramedics were killed in the direct Israeli attack on the civil defense center. Hezbollah also announced it carried out a precision strike against a convoy of Israeli military vehicles inside the al-Baghdadi outpost, leaving several troops injured. Al-Mayadeen reported that about 30 rockets were fired from Lebanese territory toward the western Galilee. Hebrew language Israeli media outlet reported a very intense missile barrage launched from Lebanon toward settlements in the north, knowing sirens warning of incoming projectiles were sounded in 16 areas within the western Galilee. Israeli media confirmed there was a power outage in several neighborhoods of the Al-Haria city following the recent rocking attack. That projectiles had damaged an electrical transformer. Earlier in the day, Hezbollah had repelled two Israeli infiltration attempts into southern Lebanon. The group said it targeted two Israeli forces with explosives, artillery shells, and rockets as they sought to infiltrate into Lebanese territory. Hezbollah later shelled desert barracks and targeted surveillance equipment in the Ruwaset al-Alam post in the occupied Shaba farms, while Israeli warplanes and artillery bombed Ada al-Shab and Shinin and shelled Hula and Merkaba with white phosphorus bombs, which of course are proscribed by international law. The Israeli regime has been attacking southern Lebanon off and on since October 7th, when it launched a devastating campaign of death and destruction in Gaza. Actually, that would have been October 8th. In retaliation, Hezbollah has launched near-daily rocket attacks on Israeli positions. At least 280 have been killed on the Lebanese border, most Hezbollah fighters, but also 44 civilians. Israel says at least 10 of its troops and 6 settlers have been killed in the area. The fighting has forced the evacuation of tens of thousands from the northern part of the occupied territories, which have been pummeled by rocket fire and shelling carried out by Hezbollah and allowed Palestinian groups. Joe, your thoughts, these latest from Israel.
Yes, well, let's don't forget what type of ally we have over there. They have a doctrine for Israeli military forces called the Hannibal Doctrine. Anytime that there's Israelis that are captured that could be used as hostages, they are to kill the hostages, which is exactly what they did on October 7th. It looks like at least a quarter, maybe a third of the people that were casualties that day, which was originally stated as 1,400 and been dropped to 1,200. So there again, they're doing hyperbole for the headlines. But it looks like at least a third of them were probably killed by Israeli attacks. And then they have the other thing called the Samson option, where we know that they are the only ones that haven't signed the nuclear proliferation agreement that is a nuclear power, and that they took stolen uranium and plutonium from American sources over decades and built over 100, by Jimmy Carter's direct knowledge, 135 nuclear bombs. But now the current report is probably over 200 nuclear bombs. And they've threatened every one of the Muslim nations that if anything happens to Israel, we're taking out all of your capitals and all of your major cities. So all the rest of the Arab nations are sitting around going, well, we don't like to watch genocide on our front porch, but if we try to do anything, these nasty SOBs will do the same thing to us that they did to the USS Liberty in 1967. This is our ally. Give me a break.
Now, Joe, we know, of course, that among the actually the number one political issue as we enter into the home stretch and the campaigning that will take place is the border issue. Trump had brilliantly shut down the border to a bare trickle. He was in the process of constructing a wall. Biden not only reversed all of that, but has opened the borders. He's giving massive financial inducements. They're conducting airplane flights to 42 different American cities, kept in secrecy from the American people to reduce the number at the border. It's a gross atrocity. There appear to be multiple motives involved, including the presumption they're going to vote Democrat after Trump waxed their clock back in 2020, concealed by the manipulation of the vote totals, where I estimate he won over 100 million votes to Biden 37. But I also believe they're being brought in to conduct guerrilla warfare to be incorporated into our military. They know that American soldiers won't fire on American troops, but these illegals will gladly do so. I believe there are caches of arms that were accumulated by government agencies with no obvious necessity for them, such as the Environmental Protection Agency. Over $1 billion in American weapons were bought by the government for what I believe are caches stashed around the country, and where the states have appeared all but hopeless to deal with the problem, Texas being the exception, where Governor Abbott has marshaled the National Guard in Texas to deal with a border. He's been supported by no less than governors of 25 different states. Not even the Supreme Court seems to be constraining what's going on there. Joe, you're in Texas. Tell us about what's going on and why you believe the situation might even bear comparison with the glory of the Alamo.
Yeah, well, we're in a final stand for the nation, and we're being invaded by an army of dictators, little minions. That's for absolutely certain. They were able to steal the 2020 election with over 20 million of generated votes, either through machine manipulation or by mail-in ballots, which we've already mentioned. And these 10 million people that have come across in and of themselves are not being able enough to impact the election. But we're dealing with people that are masters of manipulating identities, and these folks come across with no identity papers at all. They can all be given shadow identities of a dozen people apiece, and then they can show up at the polls, or they can be given mail-in ballots. So somehow they're going to be able to generate another 20 or 30 million, because it looks like the Trump lead is going to be even larger this year than it was when they used 2,000 mules in 2020. So, yeah, that's what we're dealing with.
Joe, the floor is yours, my friend. I know you want to celebrate this astonishing event as part of Texas, but also American history. The floor is yours.
Okay. Let me pull up my letter from the Alamo. Hang on just a second while I scroll the screen up.
Joe, I've got it here.
Oh, you want to read it?
Well, there's context here about the Alamo. Here we go. Victory or death. On February 24th, 1836, with a garrison surrounded and the Texas Army at the Alamo outnumbered, one of the most famous letters in American history was written by William B. Travis. It was addressed to the people of Texas and all Americans in the world. The letter was a passionate plea for aid for the Alamo garrison. He ended the letter, victory or death, the only outcome this battle could have. We invite you to visit, view the original Travis letter during its historic return to the Alamo. It's on display from February 23rd through March 24th of this year at the Alamo exhibit at the Ralston Family Collection Center. The Travis letter has traveled from Austin with DPS, Department of Public Security Escort, Safety Escort, to return to the Alamo where it was written. Bring back the magic of handwriting. Access our Travis letter activity at home. Here is the letter. Commandancy of the Alamo. Bejar, February 24th, 1836, to the people of Texas and all Americans in the world, fellow citizens and compatriots. I am besieged by 1,000 or more of the Mexicans under Santa Anna. I have sustained a continual bombardment and cannonade for 24 hours and have not lost a man. The enemy has demanded a surrender at discretion. Otherwise, the garrison are to be put to the sword if the fort is taken. I have answered the demand with a cannon shot, and our flag still waves proudly from the walls. I shall never surrender or retreat. Then I call on you in the name of liberty, of patriotism, and everything dear to the American character to come to our aid with all dispatch. The enemy is receiving reinforcements daily and will no doubt increase to 3,000 or 4,000 in 4 or 5 days. If this call is neglected, I am determined to sustain myself as long as possible and die like a soldier who never forgets what is due to his own honor and that of his country, victory or death. William Barrett Travis, Lieutenant Colonel Commandant. P.S. The Lord is on our side. When the enemy appeared in sight, we had not lost 3 bushels of corn. We have since found in deserted houses 80 or 90 bushels and got into the wall 20 or 30 head of beeves. Travis. And here you can see the letter itself. Joe.
Yeah, it's a little bit of brief history. Mexico, quote, owned Texas because they had a cabeza de Vaca traveled across the state, and they had a couple of explorers. But bottom line is they only had a half dozen outposts in Texas. They had a major one with about 1,200 people in San Antonio. They had a small one in San Marcos. They had one in Nacogdoches, and they had one in Goliad. But those were basically the only Spanish presence in the state of Texas. And the population of the Spanish, and then after the Spanish-Mexican independence fight, there was only 3,000 people that were direct descendants of either Mexico or Spain that were in the state of Texas. They had an enormous problem with 250,000 Native Americans, including the most savage tribes on the whole New World continent, and that would be the Comanches and the Apaches, and they absolutely ruled Texas. The last Apache massacre in Texas happened in 1881, almost to the day, 45 years after the Mexican army was defeated in San Jacinto by Sam Houston. So we have enormous history about what actually happened in Texas, and I've written a great article about that. I'll put a link to it called The Medina Massacres about that particular aspect. And then we also had the Spanish fought against Mexico from 1821 or from 1810 until 1821. And then they drafted a constitution very much similar to the American Constitution in 1824. But Santa Anna was, quote, elected as president. And in 1835, he suspended that and called himself the Napoleon of the West. And sure enough, he was funded by the British, who furnished the brown best muskets for his army, and the French, who furnished the cannons and the wonderful military uniforms that the Mexican army had. And when the war was over, they came over and tried to access all of the Spanish, I mean, the Mexican gold and silver mines that had been put up as collateral for all of the military equipment that the Rothschild Bank in France and England had provided to the Mexican dictator, who called himself the Napoleon of the West. So they actually invaded the Yucatan Peninsula in 1863 and installed a Rothschild Duke Maximilian from Austria as the Emperor of Mexico, and he was overthrown in 1867. So a really twisted history. We don't have time to go any more of it than that, but there's a great ballad that was written in 1955 by Jane Bowen, and it was performed first on recording by Tex Ritter, but I don't really like his version, and I've listened to Marty Robbins and covers by Willie Nelson, but by far the best one, in my opinion, is the one by Donovan. And if we can play that, that'd be fine. If not, I'll put it in a link so that people can hear the ballad.
We can play it. We just can't play it through before the break, Joe. So I'll play it after the break. Why don't you take about two more minutes we have remaining to add further thoughts and why you think this is important to commemorate?
Well, because it was a pivotal, as pivotal as this Louisiana Purchase as far as increasing the size of the United States and creating the eminent domain situation, because it also set up the battle of in 1845 against Mexico.
Hold that thought, Joe. We'll be back after this break with Joe Olson discussing the Alamo.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence. At the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming. And it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, Joe, you're welcome to expand your thoughts before we turn to Donovan's version of the song about the Alamo, your opportunity, friend.
Yes. Well, on March 2nd, 1836, 59 Texans met at a place called Washington on the Brazos. It's near a little town called Chapel Hill, pretty close to Brenham. And they signed the Declaration of Independence. And that's been a state holiday in Texas since 1836, but the city of Austin canceled the parade this year, and I'm wondering if it's because we have all these, what both FJB calls newcomers, that would be offended by a bunch of white people celebrating the victory of freedom over tyranny in our state 180 years ago.
Who canceled the event, Joe? That's outrageous.
The city of Austin, because they didn't want to provide the police force for it. They didn't want to provide money for the sponsors of the event. So bottom line is we had no Texas Independence Day celebration in the capital this year. It was in a dozen other different cities around the state because other people are still loyal Texans.
Of course.
But to give you an idea how depressed.
Of course, Austin's a very blue city, is it not? It's a bastion of liberalism. I've always thought it was ironic. Alex Jones' show should be based in Austin, Joe.
It was a beautiful city up until the lefties absolutely demolished it. It's the San Francisco of Texas. But getting back to the Texas Revolution, after Sam Houston had the most stunning victory on the American continent, where he had a group of 1,500 Mexican soldiers at San Jacinto, and he had a group of 900 Texans, and they marched at middle of the afternoon on a sunny day across an open field and massacred the Mexicans the same way the Mexicans massacred 180 people at the Alamo and massacred 400 prisoners that they had captured at Goliad. And so it was a fitting return. Remember the Alamo, remember Goliad. And at that point, Santa Ana surrendered. Texas became a nation because the United States wouldn't admit them because they had slaves and they were trying to keep the Mason-Dixon balance between the states, and they didn't have any northern states that they could annex at the same time because they hadn't reached the right population limit. So Texas was put on hold for 10 years. They formed a republic. And the first president of Texas was Sam Houston. He served for 3 years. He was followed by a guy named Barnett, who was an absolute monster. He's the one that deported the peaceful Indian tribes in the Texas area that were mined like a steel trap. The ones that Sam Houston had actually joined their tribe and married one of their brides and was actually the ones that were in Georgia that were the Trail of Tears. Which Indian tribe was that?
Yeah, go.
Trivia.
Go for it, Joe.
Yeah. I'll remember in a minute. Anyhow, so he came in, evicted all of the Native American tribes that were peaceful out of Texas, and then got the state an enormous amount of debt. So Sam Houston ran for president again, and in his second term, he was managed to get the United States annexed into Texas in 1845. That's what precipitated the Mexican-American War in 1845. But when the Comanches heard about Texas joining the Union, they said, well, that doesn't change anything for us. And 300 Comanches rode their horses through the Capitol building in celebration of the United States taking over. And like I mentioned, they were still killing people 45 years after the independence from Mexico in Texas. So that's the bottom line, a little bit of our history. When I wrote an article about it called The Medina Massacres, and I'll put a link to that. It's at Canada Free Press. But bottom line is, we don't celebrate pioneer days in Texas. We celebrate pioneer decades. So then after we joined the Union, Sam Houston was elected to be a senator of the United States. And he served until 1859, when it became obvious that Lincoln was going to win the election with a minority of 39%, that he was going to pass a Morrell tariff, which was going to tax imports of finished products from Europe, which would be French and British manufactured goods and textiles, in order to benefit the northern textile industries, the northern shipping industry, the northern banking industry, and the northern manufacturing industries. And so that was the reason why we had the Civil War. But after he realized that was happening, he resigned his Senate seat, came down, and ran for governor of Texas. And he was elected with over 60% of the vote on a no entry into war against the United States. Texas had joined as a republic, and we had the right to reject the annexation of the United States, and we could have stepped out of that. But our state legislature instead, which was heavily populated by people who were funded by the plantation industry, impeached this wonderful former president of Texas two terms and the sitting governor of Texas. And so as he resigned, it was absolutely tragic. And then it was just months later. But his resigning statement was that there's going to be an enormous bloodshed for Texas. And sure enough, 10% of the military age men in Texas were killed in the Civil War. So bottom line is that was a real depopulation effort on the part of the bankers in England that set up the Civil War the same way they've set up every other war.
Well, Joe, we are set up to hear the Donovan version. I'm very pleased you invited this opportunity. Here we go.
A challenge by Travers to die. By a line that he drew with his sword as the battle drew nigh. A man that crossed over the line was for glory, and he that was left better fly. And over the line crossed 179. Hey, up Santiana, there came soldiers below, so the rest of Texas will know and remember the Alamo. Jim Boy lay dying, his blood and his powder were dry. But his knife had been ready to take him a few in reply. Young David Crockett lay laughing and dying, the blood and the sweat in his eyes.
for Texas and freedom. A man was more willing to die. Hey, up Santee and out of Kenya, soldiers below. So the rest of Texas will know and remember the Alamo. A courier came to battle once bloody and loud, and found only skin and bones where he once left a crowd. Fear not, little darling of dying, if the world is sovereign and free, for we'll fight to the last for as long as liberty be. And out of Kenya, soldiers below. So the rest of Texas will know and remember the Alamo. And remember the Alamo.
Joe, tell us about it. You're further.
Born and raised Texan, and during the 50s, there was an enormous amount of stuff. Walt Disney did a series on Davy Crockett.
Your video's lost, Joe.
I don't know what I can do about that.
Okay.
We'll do it without
Go ahead.
Audio.
Go ahead.
In the
yeah, there we go. It's back. It's back.
Disney did a with Bess Parker on the Davy Crockett. It started off with him in Tennessee and killed him a bear when he was only three. And so that was a real popular program. And then John Wayne decided to make a movie about the Alamo, and it was a blockbuster movie. So I really wanted to see the Alamo, and my best friend neighbor wanted to see it. So our two moms put us in the back of the Thunderbird and drove us up to San Antonio to visit the Alamo in 1959. And at that time, there was no interstate highway. We drove Highway 90, which was two-lane asphalt and concrete between Houston and San Antonio. And all I can remember is that was the end of a very severe drought that happened in the 50s in Texas. And it was like nothing but cactus from the time you left Houston until the time you got to San Antonio. But San Antonio is an absolutely beautiful town, had six very historic Spanish missions, a Spanish aqueduct, a very culturally enriched city. Highly recommend people go. It's probably the most picturesque and wonderful city in the United States now that New Orleans and San Francisco have fallen. So I still highly recommend it. The people of Texas have always been fierce patriots, first in the United States, then for the first for Texas, then the United, then the Confederacy, then the United States. But General Patton had a comment about Texas fighters. He had several brigades that were Texans only. And he said, Texas could have won the war in Europe in a year if we didn't have the other 47 states on our back. So bottom line is we are 100% freedom and truth and honesty and everything that you could possibly imagine.
Joe, would you relate the Alamo story to what's going on in Texas today and the situation there and why Texas is so important to the Union in this fight to preserve the integrity of our nation?
Yes, and as a matter of fact, the Supreme Court didn't actually rule that the border guards could cut down the fences. What they ruled was that they were not going to make a decision on that until it had gone through the appellate courts underneath. And so they said that the Border Patrol could do that until there was a lower court decision and the whole entire court was able to sit on. And that was thank you to Amy Barrett Jackson, or Barrett, whatever her name is, that that Trump appointed.
Amy Coney Barrett. Amy Coney Barrett.
Yeah, the commie Barrett. Yeah. So bottom line is, they did manage to do a wonderful ruling that the states are not allowed to remove federal candidates from the ballot, any state,
And that is because those are federal offices, and only the federal government can set rules for electing those offices. So bottom line is, we still have somewhat of a functional Supreme Court and somewhat of a functional Constitution, but we need to restore that to the United States. And what Governor Abbott has done, he's had, since Perry left office during the Trump administration, 2016, he's been governor of Texas, and he's had the ability to do something about our border prior to Trump doing something. And after Biden stopped the Trump wall, he had the ability to still do things, and he didn't. So I have no respect at all for our rhino governor. And we have a whole bunch of token rhinos in the House and Senate that do the same thing. And like I mentioned, the Supreme Court, both civil and criminal, are compromised rhinos.
Joe, but isn't he doing something good here? I mean, look, he may not be perfect. He may be seriously flawed. I believe that to be true of Donald Trump. He's not perfect. He's seriously flawed. But he's the only guy in a position to save the ship, to set the course right, in my judgment, as I see it. Thus, I'm not overly sympathetic to carping about the flaws. We're all flawed, but we can't all do some good. Now, is your governor doing any good or no good at all?
Well, the optics are certainly in his favor, because what you're seeing is these enormous masses of people coming across the border unimpeded. And when he does impede them, then the Biden administration comes down and says, we'll arrest the National Guard. And they go, well, fine, we've got guns, too. So when you have a standoff at the border where you have two different armed factions of the United States military facing each other off, that's pretty bad optics for the Biden administration. And there's a lot of people in the United States that probably were Democrats that are seeing this, that are going, what in the hell is this political party doing to our whole entire nation? And certainly there's a lot of Democrats in Texas that are not supportive of this invasion that's put on us.
Yeah, yeah. Joe, tell me, tell us more about what you take to be the big picture nationally and how Texas fits into the scheme of things.
Well, you know, there again, we're faced with a mixed bag of what you want in the way of functioning reality. And that's the problem we've got. We've got a news media that lies to us about absolutely everything. We've got a government that lies to us about absolutely everything. And we have limited means to be able to counter those false narratives on a full spectrum. And that's what their full spectrum warfare against all of the citizens of the United States and de facto the citizens of the world. Because if they can shut up free speech in America, certainly finish their capture of the rest of the world.
Joe, let me return to a story I mentioned but did elaborate upon before. Biden uses secretive flights to import 320,000 illegal aliens into the United States. Biden's operating his secretive flight program to fly hundreds of thousands of illegals into the United States every year, according to records obtained by Tom Brensman at the Center for Immigration Studies. The records show DHS imported 320,000 illegals into the United States last year through a little-known flight component of Biden's CBP-1 mobile app. The migrant mobile app, Breitbart News has reported, allowed about 465 illegals to schedule appointments at the United States-Mexico border for release into the U.S. interior from January 2023 through January 2024. The app's flight component has flown additional hundreds of thousands of illegals into 43 American airports last year alone. DHS officials have refused to say which airports are being used to fly the illegals into the United States, admitting or claiming revealing such information poses operational vulnerabilities because bad actors would attempt to exploit the program. Well, in my opinion, the bad actors are the ones who are implementing the program, including DHS and Biden. Thus, Bensman reports, in short, the Biden admin's legally dubious program to fly inadmissible aliens over the border directly to U.S. airports has allegedly created law enforcement vulnerability too grave to release publicly, lest bad actors take advantage to inflict harm on public safety. Representative Jim Jordan and Tom McClintock of SDHS Secretary Mayorkas to release publicly a full numerical accounting of every illegal released by the agency into the United States since February of 2021. The CBO estimates that from January 2021 through December 2023, Biden's DHS, get this, welcomed 6.2 million illegal aliens into the United States, a foreign population nearly twice the annual American birth rate. 6.2 million, Joe. What's the purpose of having them here? What are your thoughts?
Well, the purpose is Cloward and Piven. They've got to collapse the system because the whole system is one gigantic Ponzi scheme. If you haven't read The Creature from Jackal Island, let me give you just a real quick thumbnail of how this all set up. Turns out that the monarchs in Europe were constantly at war with each other, and they constantly needed to have a supply of money. So the bankers set up a system of loaning money to the kings and queens and used the government to pay off those loans. Well, King Charles in 1673 decided that he was not going to pay back the £1 million that he had borrowed from the bankers. And so the next time a war came up, which happened to be King William in 1693, the banker said, well, we got burned by you guys the last time we loaned you money. So here's the new rules. The government will grant a charter to the monetary scientists, get that, monetary scientists, to form a bank. The bank would be given a monopoly to issue banknotes, which would circulate as England's paper currency. The bank would create money out of nothing with only a fraction of its total currency backed by coin. The monetary scientists would then lend the government all the money it needed. The money would be created for the government loans would be paid back primarily with government IOUs, i.e. taxes. And although the money would be created out of nothing, it would cost nothing to create. The government would pay interest on it at a rate of 8%. The government IOUs would be considered as reserves for creating additional loan money to the private commerce, and these loans would also earn interest. Thus, the monetary scientists collect double the interest. This was the Banking Act passed in 1694. Thank you, G. Edward Griffin, for making us aware of that. And that is the exact template they used for forming the Federal Reserve in 1913. And so they basically hollowed out every bit of our economy, every bit of the value of our money, every bit of our property rights, and every bit of our free speech rights, because they intend to collapse us and turn us into a feudal society. And that's exactly what these totalitarians have had in mind for centuries.
You know, that's what David Icke said right off the bat when COVID was released. This is an effort, number one, to destroy the middle class. Number two, to return us to a feudal society after, number three, depopulating the world by 90% to 95%. That's a horrific agenda, Joe. But that appears to be exactly what they've had in mind. I think David Icke got it right.
The bankers funded Charles, and they also funded Cromwell. For the British War that lasted like 30 years inside England. And that was an internal civil war where they ended up destroying an enormous number of castles. And oddly enough, the Magna Carta, when it was signed by King John in 1215 AD, was required to have 50 copies distributed to every major town in England. During the course of their many civil wars, there's only 4 remaining copies, and only one of them is in its original location, and that's in Salisbury Cathedral, in the southwest part of England. And I saw that copy when I was doing a tour with Lady Goodbaby, and we were going from Bath down to Bournemouth, and she said, man, it's really late and I'm really tired, can we stop for some tea? And I went, sure. And I said, well, there's a big steeple. And she wanted to pull over at just a roadside coffee shop, and I said, no, there's a big steeple, let's go look at that. We pulled up in front of the Salisbury Cathedral, and I've been to Notre Dame. You could hide Notre Dame inside this place. Absolutely magnificent structure. I'll put a link to Salisbury Cathedral with some information about the only remaining copy of the Magna Carta in its original location. But after we toured the church, we were coming back to go to the tea room so we could finally grab a clotted cream and scones and keep my English lady happy with a cup of tea. And there's an old man standing there in his World War II British uniform and his red beret. And he says, I bet you came to see the Magna Carta, didn't you? And I went, Magna Carta? You got to be kidding me. We've been to the British Museum. They got one copy and they only have allowed it to be seen, just like the U.S. Constitution, for an hour or two a day, a couple of days a week. I said, you got a Magna Carta? He goes, yeah, I got it right here. Walked in. Sure enough, there was a case with a metal cover on it. He pulls it up with a counterweight, lifted it up. And here's the Magna Carta written on sheepskin in 1215. And they beside it, they had little index cards that explained the different rights that this granted to people. Trial by jury, property ownership. Women were allowed to own property where before that any time a husband died, the first man that showed up with a dozen roses was her new husband. She had no right of refusal. So and then it's standardized weights and measurement. It's an absolutely wonderful document. And he says, you see that little brown spot down in the bottom? And there was sure enough a brown circle about 1.5 inches in diameter. He says, when I was a lad, he said, you could clearly see the wax seal that King John had placed on there. He said, but while I was away at war, so Missy decided to dust it off. And when she opened the case and dusted it, the whole thing fell away. And I'm standing there looking at this guy and I'm going, I'm talking to probably the last witness of an original wax seal on the Magna Carta by King John from 1215 AD. What an enormous moment in history that God has allowed me to share.
Joe, that's just a stunning story. He had a better copy of the document than the British Museum.
Yes, yes.
That's
they have three copies.
And bear in mind, this may be the single most important document in human history, right there, the Magna Carta.
I wrote an article about that, too, at Canada Free Press. I'll put that in.
Do that, Joe. Do that. We're coming up on the break. I want to open the lines for everyone to call in about any of the issues we've been talking about. That, of course, includes, therefore, Super Tuesday. It includes what's going on in Ukraine and elsewhere. All right for this break.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B.
for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, the call-in number to address any of these issues and question or comment with Joe and me, 608-957-8727. I repeat, 608-957-8727. You're welcome to call. Joe, in the meanwhile, I have more about the flying of illegals secretly to at least 23 airports in the U.S. This is from the Gateway Pundit. Revelations have emerged that Biden regime has been operating secret charter flights that transport illegal immigrants from foreign airports to various U.S. cities. This covert operation has been ongoing amidst an unprecedented influx of illegal aliens across the southern border. Customs and Border Protection, an agency under Alejandro Mayorkas, Department of Homeland Security, has been at the forefront of these operations, which have remained unknown to the public. Actually, we have a caller now, 408 area code. Paul, would that be you?
Who else? Who else calls you? That's Brian.
Yeah, there you go, my friend.
All righty. So, once again, you keep saying something that just triggers me mildly nowadays because I've heard it so much. And I just, I wonder why you say it, because it's just completely made up and it doesn't make any sense. It bears no, it has no basis in reality. Where earlier in the show, you talked about these migrants being brought in, funded, you know, flown or bused anywhere across the country. And you said there's many reasons. You said there's several reasons it's being done. But, you know, one of them is then you brought out the old Democrat vote. And I got to tell you, this is zero truth to it. Nobody who's behind this and who thinks it's a great idea is going, yeah, these people are going to vote Democrat down the line. It's very similar to what you said before about, you know, Jewish power is rooted in a sense of Western guilt over the Holocaust. That also is completely false and makes absolutely no sense. There's no Jew who has any power, who holds an office, that is there because somebody felt guilty about it. Okay, the world doesn't work like that. This is a racial war. It's that simple. There's nothing else to it. Politics has really nothing to do about it. And it's not just these migrants from Venezuela and, you know, Nicaragua and everywhere else. I mean, they are seeding, like planting seeds, blacks from Africa all over the country. Like in Missouri, for example, they're bringing in Congolese, like French-speaking, you know, black Africans and just sticking them in these small towns. You know, they've been doing this for a long time. They brought 10,000 Somalis into Bangor, Maine, which at the time was the whitest state in the nation. They did this decades ago. You know that they brought in the Somalis to Minneapolis. They're attacking all the whitest areas that they can. The Dakotas, they're sticking niggers and Mexicans and all kinds of other people into the Dakotas. Okay, this is a race.
I'm obliged to ask you not to use the N-word, but it's not going to have any effect, I know. Go for it.
Well, I invite you to listen to some of my podcasts over on Speak Free, Rumble, and Odyssey. Well, you will hear that word used by many people, including me on occasion, because that's what they are, okay? They're not the same species as us, just like the Jews are not the same race or the same species as us. And the problem that we have in this country is the vast majority of people have not figured out yet that the Jews are our mortal enemy, and they have complete control over the government. And there's no difference between the government and the Jews, and the government is our mortal enemy. If the government would stand aside, we could take care of all these problems. As usual, throughout history, white men have to take care of business. And if the government was not actively our enemy and would not stand aside, we could take care of any of our problems that we have as white men. That's what we've done always throughout history. We build civilizations and we conquer people. So it's frustrating, because the bottom line is we figured out, well, we had to fight the Mexicans in Texas, but we haven't figured out yet we got to fight the Jews. So
yeah, but I always appreciate your point of view. Let me just add, even Elon Musk has tweeted that the Democrats expect these migrants to vote Democrat. So it's a widely held belief. Now, it may be false, but bear in mind, I added several other reasons. I didn't give just one. I said that was one of multiple reasons. I believe they're here to conduct guerrilla warfare. Well, they're here to be drawn into our military. They're here, you know, to overwhelm the welfare system, as Joe observed. I mean, there are multiple goals are achieved by bringing in these vast numbers, Paul. Go for it.
Right. Okay. Well, okay. Those are all fine. And I heard those subsequently, but right after you said that, you branched into some other areas, and then you came back to mention those other reasons. But yeah, in the end, if they're going to join the army and or engage in guerrilla warfare, who is it that they're going to fight or to kill? Now, they may go after
you. You and me, Paul. You and me. Right. There isn't a lot of doubt about this, for crying out loud. They want these guys in the military because American soldiers won't fire on the American people, but these guys will.
That's also false. There's plenty of American soldiers, just like cops, that will fire on American people. So, I mean, a lot of them won't, okay? A lot of white ones won't, and probably a lot of black Americans as well. I mean, listen, there's plenty of so-called Americans that aren't white that oppose this as well. But the bottom line is what they're trying to do, as you know, is to make every white country into a mixed hodgepodge consumer culture dominated by Jews. This is nothing more than Jewish world communism, okay? We never defeated communism. What you're seeing here, communism, as you know, Jim, is nothing more than Judaism, all right, including the Jews themselves that have said this, okay? So it's a Jewish criminal conspiracy to rule the world, and they're doing it with their money, which they create with their fractional reserve banking system, where they conjure money up out of nothing, you know, and they tell the government that they owe them, the people owe them for the privilege, and the government collects taxes and hands it over to the Jews. But see, that's not enough for these people. They have to get a hold of all the corporations. They either own outright or sit on the boards of directors of all these corporations. They merge with each other, and then they acquire as much property as possible. I mean, this is, you know, about the real estate situation going on and so forth. So it's a war on many fronts, including economic war, medical war, biological war, you name it. And of course, in the end, it's a racial war because they got it in for us. Okay. The white, the Aryan, the Caucasian, we're the main target.
And of course I agree. It is an evolutionary strategy to mix races, to destroy the distinctive identity. The clergy plan applied to the Western Hemisphere, as it's been applied to the Western European nations, where they want to destroy the idea of nation states. The EU is a move in that direction. North American Union, a move in that direction here. Joe, I'm sure you have comments. Paul is utterly sincere in all of his remarks. Otherwise, he'd qualify as a provocateur. What he wants really is to provoke us into thinking through to unhappy, unwanted conclusions that are highly unpleasant. Joe.
Yes. Well, here's a great quote from our founding father, George Washington, before he turned into a black lesbian female. Government is not reason. It is not eloquence. It is force. Like fire, it is a dangerous servant and a fearful man. And as far as race mixing, they've done a lot to denigrate the white race by saying that we are all derived from African stock, which is an absolute absurdity that there's that much difference between the species.
No, Joe,
Robert Zepper, who has multiple videos. One of them is called Out of Africa, where he shows that Cro-Magnons, Neanderthals, and Denisovans were the genetic stock for most of the Chinese and most of the the Anglo-Saxon Europeans. And so this is not genetic stock that came out of Africa. This is genetic stock completely independent of Africa, and the African migration didn't happen until, you know, many generations later. So bottom line is, I'll put a link to Robert Zepper's two different things on YouTube. Absolutely stunning information. One of them is on the diversity of the European stock, which is all the different hair colors and eye colors, and the wonderful contributions of the Europeans to the culture of the entire planet. We're less than 3% of the population of the planet, but look at what we've been able to produce.
Paul.
Well, yeah, Joe, that's absolutely correct. And of course, what most people know, most people in the white nationalist circles have already come across this information a long time ago, is that most of these ideas about anthropology were promoted by Jewish anthropologists, and all they do is lie. I mean, as you know, your good friend, Jim Giuseppe, always says a famous quote about birds fly, fish swim, and Jews lie. I got it wrong, though. It's like fish swim, birds fly, and Jews lie. And this is what they do. This is what they're known for throughout history. The deceivers, among the many other things they're known for. That's all they do, is lie all the time. When you turn on the TV, you know, it has to be near 80 to 90% lies constantly. So nothing that they say, in my opinion, almost everything they say is subject to rejection, especially when it comes to telling us our history or telling us the truth about human evolution or, you know, human anthropology. So, yeah, I heard this years ago. I first started hearing probably about the same time you heard it, Jim, or Joe, you heard that race was a social construct. I think I heard that in the 90s. Really? And I had it by the guy. I was in a coffee shop back then, and this was a half black, half white guy. I don't know what percentage. He was a mulatto, and he was a grown man in his 50s. And, you know, we were talking about things, and this came up, and he actually says, "Oh, well, that's absolutely true. I believe it." I said, "What? That race is a social construct?" He says, "Yeah, that's absolutely fact." And I just looked at him. I just laughed. I just laughed and shook my head. I wasn't going to engage in a discussion with somebody who could actually say that.
It's a biological fact. It's not a social construct. I mean, it's absurd how far they go. It's like denying the difference between men and women. I mean, this is lunatic. This is the inmates running the asylum, Paul. It's just bizarre beyond belief.
And they won't stop until they are stopped. You see what they're doing. They just keep pushing and pushing and pushing. They're perfectly happy to take three or four steps forward, if knowing they're going to take two or two and a half steps back, because when it's all done and the dust settles and everything quiets down, well, they're still a step and a half more forward than they were before. This is what they do. They're very bold, okay? And they won't stop. You know, they can continue to do this until physically they're stopped. You and I both know this. It's not really a political solution. I know Trump is better than Biden. Now, I will concede that any day of the week. But, you know, Trump cannot be trusted. And I don't really believe that he would do the things necessary that have to be done. I mean, a whole lot more has to be done than drain the swamp. That's for sure.
Give us your agenda, Paul. If you were in a position to implement, what measures would you take to right the ship of state?
my imaginary presidency. Well, I think, Jim, you can admit this, that if there's a power structure that exists, okay, and by that I just mean people, obviously, the idea of the deep state or a power behind the throne is just, it's conceptual only. There's individuals, there's people and groups that would need to be dispatched, right? Hung, shot, guillotined, whatever. Trump is not going to do that. He has to take power. If Trump was sincere, and I don't really totally believe he's sincere, there's probably parts of him that are, but he would need to take over. He would need to take power so that he's not opposed, because we saw the opposition against him in his first presidency. And if he does get elected, and I'm not sure I believe that, but if he does get elected this next time, that's the same story over and over again. These people are going to oppose every move he makes, just like this federal judge who just so happens to be Jewish, by the way, just a happenstance, told Texas, no, you can't do this. Right.
Paul, I'm really interested in specificity here. What do you think needs to be done?
Well, I mean, I would eliminate almost every bureaucracy in every department. I mean, that's what
you're going to dramatically simplify the executive branch of government in particular.
Well, all these things didn't exist generations ago. Your parents or grandparents never saw all these departments and bureaucracies. I would completely obviously eliminate the Federal Reserve, put us back on a sound monetary footing, and so on. And of course, I would codify into law that nobody other than a white man, white male, could be a judge, a police officer, and a politician. And then I would also push for separation of whites and blacks. I mean, there's plenty of decent, hardworking blacks, but the bottom line is whatever percentage of that population, whether it's 30%, 40%, we could debate it. It's completely dysfunctional and they're a drain on society, and we should not have to deal with them. We should not have to police them. We should not have to arrest them, incarcerate them, educate them, or anything else. They can have their own areas. You know, segregation is really ultimately the solution, and it's what people naturally want. And there's lots of blacks that feel the same way.
Would you agree to undoing the Patriot Act, reversing to the structure before, even if you're going to dramatically reduce the number of agencies and bureaucratic enclaves in the government? Isn't that an important move to make?
Well, of course, all these acts and all these executive orders don't mean anything unless there's a particular a policy in place and politicians in place that will continue to violate our laws and violate the Constitution. The Constitution really is a goddamn piece of paper, just like George Bush said. But that doesn't mean it's a bad idea. It's good, but it's meaningless if we're ruled by a foreign, a racial alien enemy. And that's how the Europeans knew the Jews. They knew them as racial aliens. Okay.
What should we do immediately vis-a-vis the border crisis?
Well, the border, again, is just it's an imaginary line, right? There's a fence and a wall in some places, but a lot of areas there's not. So it's conceptual in nature. I mean, essentially, we're talking about a racial policy, right? As I've made the point, and it's true, a lot of people don't want to admit it. I don't think you're one of them. You know, you're not as hardcore as me, but we would not object if we had some more Germans and Swedes and Norwegians coming across the border and settling here, right? I mean, the thing is, people talk about things, but they don't really want to say what they really feel and they really think. It's a form of intellectual cowardice, and I get it. And I'm not one of those people, as you well know. The border is the migrants, immigration, all these are just bud words. What we really should have, what we used to have, is a racial policy. That's what that 1965 Act, the Immigration Reform of the Hart-Celler Act, overturned, was our racially based policy, which was in place at that time for, I believe, close to 50 years, where they decided, I think it was in the 20s, they made a decision to make our immigration policy based upon roughly the percentages of people that were here. And of course, it was vast majority white. What they did is they delineated it based upon Northern European, you know, and like Southern or Mediterranean European, you know, the Italians and so forth. And they broke it down that way. Okay. Well, we excluded, I'm sure you've heard of the Chinese Exclusion Act, right? I mean, we had a policy that did those things here in the Bay Area. Now where I'm at, I swear to God, Jim, if you try to sell a piece of property, you're going to get pretty much nothing but Chinese and Indian buyers. Okay. And
yes.
I've experienced this twice now. I've seen houses and I've seen
yes.
people coming through and looking at them, real estate's bringing them. And it's rare that you get a white buyer to a piece of property here. So this is, you know, this is only going one direction. It has to be reversed. And we being nice about it is not an option, unfortunately. We can comfort ourselves with the fact that we've been given no choice, because our racial alien enemy that controls the government and all instrumentalities of the government has one design in mind, okay, and that's to swamp us and non-white foreigners, and they have an abundant supply, because supposedly white people are only 10% of the world's population. I've heard as low as 8, I don't know. And supposedly they said that at the turn of the century, like in the early 1900s, we were about 20 to 25% of the world's population at that time. So this is only going one direction. And when you dilute, you know, your racial stock, you can never get that back.
Paul, who's gonna take the measures that need to be done? I mean, are you talking about non-governmental entities like militias taking the lead? Are you talking about the government taking the lead under better leadership? Tell me, how would this be implemented? How would we secure the border, for example?
Well, every society throughout history has had a leadership structure. Okay, so I'm not obviously. To topple our leadership structure, which would have to take place first, it's got to be replaced with another leadership structure. And what I'm saying, and I'm not alone, I don't make this stuff up, is it needs to be racially based. Okay. So, you know, a constitution is a great idea, right? But what good is a constitution if Jews control everything and steal all your wealth, right? And try to destroy you medically, biologically, legally, right? So, in other words, you have to have racial cohesion, right? And you have to have a leadership structure. And that can and will take place. Like I said, if the government was to stand aside, we could handle all these problems. I mean, do you think there would be any shortage of volunteers at the border, Jim? No. Do you think there would be any shortage of volunteers to round up these people and send them back to where they came? And that would be the first option. I don't have any wish to harm any of them, really. But the bottom line is we better get used to the idea that we may have to.
Okay. I want to apologize to a caller that I seem to have overlooked. Caller, if you could come back on right now, I'll get you on the air. I'm very sorry. I missed the number there. You were sitting there waiting patiently, and I missed. Please do call in while we continue our conversation. I'm very apologetic.
Yeah, me too. I would.
Yeah, Paul, you're really talking about totally different society, the Constitution, not fundamental. The Jews have been thrown out of over 100 nations. Would you think that's would that be a sufficient measure or not? It sounds to me like you're going much further, not just excluding Jews, but designating only whites to be in positions of administration of the government.
Well, because as you know, I mean, you can look around and you look at the news. You've seen all the stories I have over the last decade and a half. They've deliberately put all these non-whites in positions of power, right? That's why we have all these non-white and often, as you know, often homosexual or lesbian or whatever, police chiefs, mayors, prosecutors. They do this on purpose.
Stand by. We got the caller back. 518, join the conversation. Is it
Hey,
Ryan?
Jim, thanks for taking...
Yeah, go.
Look, okay, look, I agree with Paul, okay, immensely, okay? You know, the Jews started the NAACP, they started Black Lives Matter. But first of all, you guys started, you know, you bought into the mainstream media stuff, you know? We get the blue state, the red state. That's all reversed, okay? Now they say migrants. Nobody says immigrants anymore. When they come into the country, they're an immigrant, okay? And I'd like to ask your guest, if I may, and I do love Paul's, you know, he's a very intelligent guy. But, you know, Jim, you and I, and I think a lot of others, believe that they're going to move Biden out and bring somebody else in, probably Gavin Newsom. As a matter of fact, Dan Bongino said that recently, okay? He says they're going to move him out, you know? And I was wondering if your guest, if he has that same idea, that they're going to move Biden out, or does he think that they're going to stay with Biden? And, you know, because if they stay with Biden, I don't even think they can steal it again, because the people just, I think it'll be too obvious myself, but I was wondering what your guest might think.
I agree. Joe.
Yeah, the FBI and the CIA also funded the Weather Underground, the Black Panthers, the Ku Klux Klan, anything they could do to fund vision lines and use wedge issues to divide the whole entire country. It's absolutely absurd that we've got this level of government that is so subversive
But the question is, do you think they're going to drop Biden and plug in maybe Gavin Newsom or Michelle Obama?
They don't have very many people left on the bench. There's nobody in the Democratic Party that has any amount of attraction to any of the voters.
Well, that's true, Joe, but it doesn't matter to them. I mean, for God's sake, look at who they gave us, Biden and Kamala Harris. And as Jim knows, Kamala Harris polled the lowest of all the vice presidential candidates, like 3%.
Yeah, she didn't even make it to Iowa, and she winds up being appointed vice president. I think as an insurance policy, if anybody could be worse than Biden, it would have to be Kamala Harris. Good gravy.
Right, this is what they do. This is what they do.
New York, go ahead. Add further thoughts.
Okay, Jim, I know you're a big supporter of Trump, okay? You know, but he broke a dozen promises or so from the first time around. He never built the wall. He never jailed Hillary. He didn't bring the troops home from the Middle East. He didn't get along with Russia. He didn't overturn Obamacare. No vaccine commission, no voter integrity commission. Didn't fix the infrastructure. Didn't bring back Glass-Steagall. And he didn't stop the funding sanctuary cities. And there's more. I mean, I could go on. You know, he wound up selling arms, okay? Years ago, he talked about Saudi Arabia being involved in 9/11. He sold arms to them. And then the House and the Senate both passed the bill to stop aiding, okay, the Saudis in their slaughter of the Yemen. He vetoed that bill. You know, I mean, obviously he's better than Biden.
To me, this falls in the category of him being, yes, seriously fought. Who is better? Who can do more for the country?
Oh, I'd rather see you or Paul or Joe. I think you'd all do better. I mean, you know, truthfully, I trust you guys. I think you're telling the truth.
Thank you for listening to Revolution
Radio. Your family, your friends, people you love and care about, do not know.
Join me in the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is advanced ancient global civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Industrial Complex podcast here on Revolution Radio, Studio B, every Wednesday, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Get fit, empowered, physically, mentally, and spiritually.
Hello, my name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion.